Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I'm the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on, not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
All right, welcome live to a midnight edition of Carson's Corner. It is November 2nd, 2014. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you here. This is a spur-of-the-moment show. I just had to put out a show here today so I can be with you, the listeners, the entire hour, folks. We have the chat room open if you want to chime in the chat room, or if you want to give me a call during the course of this hour, you can at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. We'll be pleased to take any and all points of view on this program. I'm a very, very easygoing person, and we don't have a call screener, so anybody that calls in gets right on the program. That's it. So pleased to be with you here. And as Harry Kaysen of the Zeitgeist Movement said, you want this is a program that is going to give you content that the bosses don't want you to know. I think that's a very, very important point here, okay, because as the corporate media has consolidated, we've seen nothing but media concentration. Really, I mean, you know, you can go back more in maybe 15, 20, 30 years ago when Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff that has happened. But one of the things that has happened is as the media has consolidated, the divergence of opinions, the differing opinions get basically filtered out. And now it's impossible. It is impossible to find a viewpoint that challenges capitalism to any extent on the corporate-owned, corporate-sponsored, corporate-driven media. I mean, that is just an absolute fact. You can. And if you try to, you know, turn into talk radio, it's nothing but carefully crafted right-wing propaganda. If you try to read a newspaper, go see if there's a labor section. Go see if you can get any news pertaining to the working class outside of the context of how it affects big business. And you can't. And so, you know, this is what has happened now, is that people just don't have anywhere to turn to get someone from a working class perspective that speaks to working class issues that is not corporate owned, not corporate sponsored again. So a lot of people now are starting to look for alternatives, and Carson's Corner is one of these places. It is. And there's a lot of other podcasts out there, particularly on the Commons Project Network, that you guys can check out. And Carson's Corner is actually going to be working with the Anti-Capitalist radio show hosted by David Arthur Smithers and Gabriel Pierre. It's coming up soon. I'm going to talk more about that as the broadcast goes on. But, you know, we've been talking about, ever since I've had the election boycott advocates on the program, and ever since I became a member of the election boycott advocates, we've been talking a lot about noncompliance. And Christopher Alan Driscoll, who really I consider to be the spokesperson of the election boycott advocates, he's a guy that articulates the message probably better than anybody, because he's been around for a long time. And, you know, the election boycott advocates, we have a manifesto, we have a mission, we have a goal, and we have radio programs every Sunday night on here on Carson's Corner that are dedicated to getting the message out. But one of the things that I have not struggled with, but I've kind of realized, is that the election boycott advocates, we have a purpose. We want to spread noncompliance. And so I like to talk outside of that, and like to talk about, you know, a free range of issues, as we do on you know, the Election Boycott Advocates podcast. But I want to talk, you know, more kind of, you know, unstructured, more kind of, you know, off the cuff, and you know, just me and you, the audience, because that's therapeutic for me, and it's something that I have to do. But you know, Christopher has really, really taught me a lot, as has Thomas Baldwin, another Election Boycott Advocates member. And he constantly talks about noncompliance, okay? And, you know, basically, there's many ways that you can participate in noncompliance, all right? But, you know, we talk about how America is moving into a fascist country, where the countervailing institutions are being withered away every single year. And this is undeniable. There is no denying this. Regulatory agencies have come under the capture of big business. The government doesn't regulate business. Business regulates the government. It is impossible to separate the two. And corporations have long been the seekers, okay? It is labor unions in America. Labor unions are basically extinct, except for the public sector, which is under attack. And my guess is, as we advance towards a corporate state, you'll see the public sector be obliterated. There's already a lot of public support due to the propaganda campaign waged by the elites to go after public employees, because we know that public employees have bargaining rights, and there's nothing more terrorizing to corporate America than an even playing field in the workplace. Corporate America and the ruling class do not want democracy in the workplace, which is why they're absolutely petrified of unions. Throughout our history, they've obliterated unions, and now, as Joe Burns, the author of the book Reviving the Strike, points out, we have a system of labor control in America where corporations own the labor board. Corporations know the ins and outs of labor law. They wrote labor law, okay? They instead of hiring thugs to break up union drives, they can now, you know, hire lawyers, someone like Richard Berman, who's known as Dr. Death, a man who lobbied on behalf of the tobacco industry and just about every other disgusting industry that you can think of. He's a union buster, and this is legal in the United States of America, and corporations spend billions of dollars union busting, which in a lot of other countries, particularly industrial countries, union busting is illegal. Unions, boom, gone. Any type of mention of worker solidarity, working class issues, it's filtered out of the corporate media. It's ruled out by default in a market-based system. Okay, so that's it, done. You could just, our open bribery system known as campaigns, where campaigns are financed by private wealth by and large. It's another way that we're moving towards fascism, where everything is dependent upon money in America. Politicians, even if they start out good, they get molded by the culture in Washington, D.C., and they inevitably become corporate profits. Well, this is all happening right before our eyes. It is advancing rapidly here. The alternative to the economic circumstances that we have after the presidency of Barack Obama is to go more towards a fascist state. But one of the reasons why this is happening is because we are complying with the system, okay? We are complying with the system every time we vote. Every time we step in a voting box, we're saying, you know what? Our system of government is legitimate. Our system of labor, our laws, our elections, our politicians, they are legitimate. And they're using our vote to oppress us. It's like Malcolm X said, don't march with your oppressors. And that is what you're doing by voting. But as I mentioned last week on the show, noncompliance extends beyond voting. Noncompliance can extend also to economic issues and economic situations. You know, for example, I mentioned our labor law, okay? When you work, and we all have to rent ourselves out for survival, okay? I am uncomfortable with what I have to do for a living, but I justify it because I need to rent myself out for survival, or else I don't survive in the capitalist system. Okay, my needs are not going to be addressed unless I rent myself out for survival to a corporation that is willing to pay me whatever they determine I'm worth. Okay, and so, but you know, if we start to question our economic system, when we start to say, you know what, it's not acceptable for corporations to use our commons, to use our police forces, use our fire departments, use our court systems, use our legislators, use every mode of control that they have, and not pay taxes. It is absolutely atrocious. They are dodging the tax bill and passing it off to us. And so therefore, because these corporations are, as Christopher Alan Driscoll points out, totalitarian systems where the rule is at the top, workers have no say. Chris Hedges, the brilliant author, has said that human beings have no intrinsic value to corporations. We are disposable. Corporations are monsters trying to gobble up as much profit as they can. Okay? If we say, you know what? I'm sorry. This is our land. Okay, we have a different idea of ownership, and these corporations are lucky to do business in this country. They're lucky to use our educated workforce. They're lucky to use electricity, to use everything that they can that was spurred by taxpayer funded research. They're lucky, and it's a privilege. These corporations have no rights. They're not people. Their well-being should not be elevated among above the well-being of the working class. And so therefore, you know, we're not going to allow them to participate in our economy. We're not going to allow them to be here and be creations of the state without them doing what's in the best interest of society. Now, I realize that, you know, just what I'm saying here, just to do what's in the best interest of society and not make money, you know, not the money sequence of value trumping the life sequence of value, that is predicated on a very dangerous idea that we have to care for one another, as Noam Chomsky said in his latest alternate interview. But this is a form of noncompliance, because if you come to this realization, if you understand that you know this is how it is, and that our well-being is more important than the well-being of corporate America, then you start to say, okay, you know what? We're going to take over these corporations. We're going to bring democracy to the workplace. And instead of, you know, one person making a decision that's going to affect the lives of everybody, instead of us putting the mobility of corporations ahead of the mobility of workers, we're going to democratize these workplaces, and we're going to form worker-owned cooperatives, which are very profitable and address the needs of the working class. That's another form of compliance. I mean, you know, you could just go down the line, issue after issue, as it pertains to our economy. I mean, you could look at the role of privatization in America. Okay. Now, I understand that the marketplace does a good job of distributing certain products that, you know, the government can't. I accept that there has to be a role of business in our society. You know, in other words, the private sector is good at creating and making certain products. I don't want the government to make my computer. I don't want the government to, you know, make my sneakers and whatnot. But I also recognize that the private sector should not be administering and cannot be administering services that are very, very important to sustaining human life. For example, our healthcare system. Okay, there is absolutely no reason that we should not have a single payer healthcare system in America. There is no reason that we should essentially treat our health as a commodity. Private for-profit health insurance companies do nothing. They do absolutely nothing. They don't take your temperature. They don't perform surgeries. They don't help you at all. They're simply banksters. They're simply entities that skim money off the top and decide what they're going to pay and how much they're going to pay. They're disgusting leeches that exist in a sick society that we have in America right now. Okay, and the proof is in the pudding. Our healthcare system is the most wasteful and inefficient system the world has ever known. It is siphoning, you know, $1 out of every $6 of our GDP. In the 1960s, you know, we spent less than 5% of our GDP on healthcare. Now that's up past 18%. All right? It's absolutely disgusting. But this is an example of rejecting privatization. Because as the Zeitgeist folks point out, privatization is built on waste and inefficiency. In order for a product to enter the marketplace, it is critical to maintain cyclical consumption. These are all concepts that you can read more about in the Zeitgeist movement, in the Zeitgeist films, that cyclical consumption continues and that our economy be based on consumption. And because of that, efficiency and sustainability are the enemies of the workplace. Okay, it is critical for things to break down. It is critical for things to depreciate. It is critical to keep you consuming so that the system can go around and companies can make money and more money. And that is what privatization is. That is essentially what the private sector is. You know, you can look at our defense industry, wasteful and inefficient. You can look at our prison industry, you know, wasteful and inefficient. And, you know, that's something we can reject. That is something that we could say, you know what, I'm sorry. We're not going to comply in the thought process that leads us to privatization. We're going to exercise non-compliance. And the third thing, the third area of non-compliance is media consumption. I mentioned at the top of the show that we've seen a huge consolidation of media ownership in America, okay? Right now, chances are if you read something or you listen to something or you watch something, it's owned by just a select few companies, okay? And this creates an inherent conflict. This creates contradictions where the corporate media has a vested interest in shaping the news, in you know, telling us who matters and what matters. And that's, you know, something that's discussed in Noam Chomsky's propaganda model. But you can reject these institutions. You could say, you know what, I'm sorry. The folks over at MSNBC are no different than the folks over at Fox News. All of these people do not come from a working class background. All of these people are far removed from the struggles that working Americans face. And therefore, because of who they are and because of their institutional structure, they are invalid. I find them to be invalid. And so therefore, you don't comply in buying or watching corporate media. It is invalid because of its institutional structure, and you search for alternative sources of media. This is the same thing we can do with many other areas of our country, of our economy. We can also issue non-compliance boycotts of the banks. Okay, what do we talk about, you know, on the show a lot? We talk about how banks used to be, you know, boring institutions run for the betterment of local economies. You know, you could go borrow money from a bank, you could spend that money in the local economy, and you could start a business in a local economy, and you could grow that bank, and that bank would lend money to the community, and therefore they were very careful about who they could lend money to, because you ultimately had to pay that money back. And banks were used basically for the general welfare of the community. Well, now banks are essentially gambling casinos, and our money is used, you know, to use as collateral essentially in high risk endeavors that we don't consent to. You know, I didn't consent to Bank of America, you know, participating in the derivatives market. I didn't consent to Chase, you know, writing mortgages using lax standards to just about anybody that applied for a mortgage. I didn't consent to the securitization change. I didn't consent to, you know, the epidemic of liar loans. But yet our banking institutions, the folks that really own the place, they own Washington, D.C., they went wild. They went wild over the past, you know, 20-plus years, even going back to Ronald Reagan, 30-plus years. And they did this when both the Democrats and the Republicans were in charge. More was done to deregulate Wall Street under the Clinton administration. More was done to change the way government regulated Wall Street and government interacted with Wall Street during the Clinton administration than was the case during the Reagan administration or during the Bush administration. So you could see that both political parties are beholden to the financial institutions, and these are the same institutions that lend our government money, essentially. And you know, we're all complying in it. We're all feeding the beast in one way or another. And I'm no martyr here. It's going to take personal effort on my part. It's going to take us to, you know, go for the greater good and perhaps put aside any temporarily inconveniencing endeavors. All right, there's just no question about that. But we can issue a national boycott. We could boycott these banks. We could boycott an organization like Walmart, which has been the most destructive force in this country, in my opinion, for the last several decades. I mean, forget about a terrorist attack. Forget about somebody in a cave in Syria or Afghanistan, somebody with a hood. Although those people are terrifying and you know, they are evil, they're not in a capacity to attack us. They're not in a capacity to economically drain us. Walmart is. You know, Walmart has more economic power than most industrialized countries or most countries on the face of this earth. Walmart is now the number one private employer in America, over 4,000 stores. And what has happened is that the social degradation that has taken place because of Walmart is just through the roof. People are poor. People are living shorter lives. People are killing themselves working in an abusive, stressful environment that treats people like human commodities. And we're basically subsidizing them. We are subsidizing them with our tax dollars. We're subsidizing them by buying things. We're subsidizing them, you know, a whole host of different ways. Well, you know what? Again, non-compliance. Spread non-compliance. We're not going to comply with Walmart. We're not going to, further them. We're not going to feed that beast. And so there are different ways. There are different modes of non-compliance. And that's what we have to do. We have to reject these systems. We have to reject Congress. Only 9% of people support Congress. 9%. What does that show you, ladies and gentlemen? It is absolutely critical that we challenge their rule. Okay? We do not accept these people as, you know, our rulers. They're not our rulers. They have no connection to us. And this is just something to think about. It really is. And, one of the things that we talked about last week on this program is we talked about revolution. And this is really a recurring theme. Anytime you listen to this show or anytime you listen to any of the programs on the Commons Project Network or, you know, anti-capitalist radio or, you know, the real alternative news sources and individuals that come from a working poor background, as I do, and as I'm sure many of my comrades do. You hear about revolution, okay? And, you know, we thought that we had a revolution in 2008. At least I did. I was on board with President Obama. I was inspired by his campaign to the point where I actually started this political show in 2008. I started this political show while I was a undergraduate student at Rider University. And by and large, the people, the young college kids, they didn't like the show. But it didn't matter because all I cared about is getting this viewpoint out of there. Okay? But at the end of the day, President Obama turned out to be a complete failure. President Obama turned out to be the more effective evil in advancing the corporate agenda. President Obama has set revolution back to God knows when, or something knows when. And, you know, as a result, the fundamentals of the economy are going to continue. It's going to get worse for us because now, as I mentioned, the alternative now is to move more quickly towards a fascist state. But one of the things that we discussed last week was that when you have a revolution, the consciousness transfers transform. People transform their consciousness very, very quickly. Okay, and you can go from, you know, 0 to 10 very, very quickly. And what I think is going to happen, and you know, Harry Kaysen and Christopher disagree with me, but what I think is going to happen is that the material conditions of capitalism are going to deteriorate, and that is going to accelerate a, you know, transforming of consciousness on the part of the American people. When things get so bad, when we have another meltdown, when Wall Street, you know, completely tanks our economy again, when Wall Street and private interests get their money on your Social Security, when they get their money on everything, when corporate America privatizes your organs, they privatize the water system, as we're seeing in Detroit, they privatize the air. When they do that, the material conditions of capitalism are going to completely deteriorate, and people will look for change, radical change, just like was the case during the New Deal Revolution. You recall when Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke about taxing the rich, when he welcomed the hate of the business community, people applauded him. Okay? John Rockefeller, I believe, it was too dangerous for him to give out his coins as a publicity stunt in New York City to poor people because there was such resentment to his class of people because they tanked the economy. It was a transformation in consciousness, and people wanted blood. People wanted retribution. And that's what we got to have in America right now. You know, we got to look at someone like Mitt Romney. And again, this is not relegated to the Republican Party. It's not relegated to the GOP. It's both political parties. It's the ruling class. It's both factions of the business party. But I'll use someone like Mitt Romney because he's a shining example. Mitt Romney illustrates that the negative attributes of society can become positively rewarded ventures for industry. That's a tenet in the Zeitgeist movement, okay? Here we have a guy like Mitt Romney who is a creature. He's not a human being. Okay? He is a sociopath. He is someone that is addicted to money. He is someone that likes to fire people, likes to shut down factories. He's someone that has inflicted structural violence against people, and as a millionaire, probably 100 or 2 times over, and wants to continue his onslaught on the American people. He is a sick person. Okay, again, he is a sociopath. He is indifferent to human life. And yet someone like Mitt Romney can run for president of the United States and get 90% of the racially aggrieved vote out there and be still held up as a prominent member of society. And that shows you how sick our society is, where someone like Mitt Romney is looked at as a respectable human being. Of course, Mitt Romney is well adjusted to a sick society. He is well adjusted to a sick game. But this is, we need to arrive at a point of moral consciousness where someone like Mitt Romney is ostracized from society, where he is looked at as the person or as the thing that he truly is. All right? And so this is what I think is going to happen. And, you know, it's my opinion. I don't know. There are many more people that have many different opinions about how the change is going to come. But make no mistake about it, we cannot sustain our current system. Make no mistake about it, the Occupy movement, as Paul Street points out, is not gone. The sentiment is still there. People are still angry and still disgusted by the ruling class and disgusted by the immoral economic system that we have that is full of contradictions and that inevitably leads to income and wealth consolidation. It's been said that capitalism is an economic system designed to arrange for profits and wealth for those at the top. And I think the evidence is abundantly clear at this point. But, that's what we have. And what does that entail? What does a revolution entail? What is the end result of a revolution? Well, if you believe the election boycott advocates, if you read our manifesto, you will see that what we want, and this is pointed out by Christopher Driscoll on the show last week, is a socialist cooperative commonwealth, an economy that is based on worker-owned and managed cooperatives, and a social safety net system that includes things like Social Security, free health care, and education. And these are not radical ideas. You know, maybe in the corporate media, for obvious reasons, they would be presented as radical ideas, but they're really not. Because if you poll the American people, and without, you know, giving them the deceptive language that is used to lock people into the status quo, if you ask them straight out, do you favor an increase in the social safety net? Do you think that Social Security benefits should be more generous? You would find overwhelming support, particularly among the working class sector, than, you know, other solutions, perhaps capitalist solutions. If you ask people, do you think that education should be free, that someone should have to pay $100,000 for a college education, where other countries are doing it for free? South Korea, Germany, they're all beating us in college attendance, and their citizens are going to school for free. You would find that a majority of the American people support an idea like that. Health care. Do you think that there should be a single-payer health care? Do you think that the government should be competing with the private sector to offer the public a choice of the health care delivery system? And you would find overwhelming support for that, okay? And these are somewhat socialist solutions. These are, you know, what we call for at the election boycott advocates, in conjunction with worker-owned cooperatives, commonwealth initiatives, and other, you know, self-managed institutions that will be in the hands of we the people. It's all important stuff, and it's all, you know, things that we can achieve. Okay, because at the end of the day, we love socialism in America. We do. The American people just don't know it because they've been bombarded with corporate propaganda, you know, equating socialism with mass murder and whatnot, even though, you know, more people have been murdered in the name of, quote, free markets than anything else. We love socialism or social systems, whatever you want to call it, or, you know, social ideas. We love the police department. We love the fire department. We love the military. At least the idea that the military is supposed to protect every citizen of the United States, regardless of their income. We love public parks. We love the commons. We love Social Security. We love Medicare. We love Veterans Administration. I mean, these programs are our social systems. And they are run at a much greater efficiency than the private sector. And this is not debatable. We love the post office. So we need to expand this. We need to expand what works in our economy. And we need to get rid of what doesn't work. But again, keep in mind, as Noam Chomsky says, these ideas are predicated on a very dangerous idea. And therefore, they're under attack. Milton Friedman famously said he wants to get rid of all public parks because they're predicated on a very dangerous idea. But the ruling class doesn't care. They don't care about what benefits society. They're only interested in diminishing the opposition. That's what the ruling class cares about. They could care less about whether or not Social Security keeps people out of poverty. They could care less about whether or not Medicare is necessary to ensure that elderly individuals have some sort of safety net. They can care less about whether or not unemployment benefits help people stay afloat. They could care less because the wealthy want to diminish opposition. The wealthy want to have more control and more power and are far removed from the working class struggle of America. They are constantly waging a class war against us. Okay, these are the most class conscious individuals. They're the most racist among us, the most manipulative, the most secretive, the most likely to steal. This is all documented. This is all substantiated. Okay, and they're running the show. And so they don't care. They don't care about the general welfare. The general welfare is ruled out by default in a market system, the market system that we have. It's ruled out by default. And so, we got to start to realize what's happening here. And we got to start spreading noncompliance. We'll be right back after this message. I want to talk about this documentary I saw. It's called The House I Live In. It's a phenomenal documentary, and it's on Netflix about the war on drugs. So we're going to get into that as we come back here on Carson's Corner. Keep it right here on Carson's Corner. Make sure to check me out on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA and also on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. We'll be right back after the time, folks.
white wall.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
We're back here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. We have the chat room open. Also, if you want to give me a call during the course of the remainder of the program, you can at 347-326-9749, 347-326-9749. I want to transition and talk about this documentary I just saw. It's called The House I Live In, and it's about the drug war in America. And, you know, a lot of the issues that we discuss on Carson's Corner relate to, you know, what was in this documentary, and just relate to the broader struggle that all of us face on a daily basis from our system and from our politicians and from, you know, the business interests that dominate our politicians. One of the ways that the class war has been illustrated has been in the drug war, the so-called war on drugs. And it's a pretty interesting that, you know, the politicians in America, and this, you know, again, this goes to both political parties, both major political parties. This is not the big bad Republicans. You know, Ralph Nader wrote a piece. I'm not sure how. I didn't get a chance for Politico, but it was a real short piece about how, oh, the GOP, if they win, it's going to be terrible. Listen, this is happening under Democrats and Republicans. Our drug laws, right, the so-called war on drug. Well, I found this interesting, that since 1971, okay, the United States of America has spent over $1 trillion on the war on drugs. Now, I was surprised because I figured it would be much, much higher than that. It probably is higher than that, I would be willing to bet. I don't know what costs, you know, that's got to be on, you know, agents, that's got to be on prisons, you know, drug enforcement, but $1 trillion is, I'm sure it's more than that. But even though we spent all of this money on the so-called war on drugs, drug use has remained the same in America. Okay, right now the United States of America has 25% of the prison population. And what has happened is these private for-profit companies, Corrections Corporation of America, you know, Wackenhut, other you know, defense contractors that get involved with, you know, producing products that are ultimately bought by our government, you know, sometimes it, with a weak procurement process. And it's all a big racket. It's all a money-making machine that is extremely wasteful and inefficient. And this borders right with what we're talking about, the private sector, how the prison sector in America is extremely wasteful and inefficient, because if you look at the recidivism rate, you look at how many people are locked up for drug-related offenses relative to their recovery. For example, you know, someone in prison for drugs is much higher, much more likely to, you know, get out and do drugs again because of the lack of treatment that they receive in the prison system, where the emphasis, you know, since the Nixon administration put on overdrive during the Reagan administration, has been to lock them up, mandatory minimums, right? You know, equate drug use with murder and all of this, you know, individualistic, you know, analysis, no broader analysis of the system and how that could contribute to drug use and why people are using the drugs. You know, one of the participants in this film was a man named Dr. Gabor Mate. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. But this is the guy who was in some of the Zeitgeist movies. And he's Hungarian. I think he's from Canada. But the guy's brilliant. He was the one that came up with the idea that, I don't know if it was him, but he was mentioning how, you know, the addictions of the oil executives, where, you know, oil drilling and oil companies are so destructive to our earth, to our environment, to our health. And yet these addictions are rewarded, you know, with the ridiculous salaries and money that the CEOs pull in. And yet it's rewarded. But yet, you know, crack addiction and any other addiction is ostracized in our society. Well, he says, why are people doing drugs? Why do people feel the need to put drugs in their body? And one of the points he came up with was to soothe the pain. People are trying to soothe the pain. And when you, and that's true. And that's true of all of us, okay? All of us have to soothe the pain in some way, shape, or form. But what brings upon the pain? Why do people feel such pain? And it goes right back to our economy, goes right back to capitalism, where capitalism is a highly competitive economic system that is built on competition, right? It, by definition, we are a very stratified society. And with that division comes, you know, social degradation. And this is chronicled in the book by Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett, The Spirit Level, where every measure of health in the capitalist system gets worse. The higher the GDP is, the lower standard of life, the lower quality of life for the people are. And this is true in America. It's getting worse. It's unfortunately so embedded in our culture that nothing is happening. But another point that is made in this documentary by David Chase, who is the creator, I believe, of the TV show The Wire. And let me tell you something. David Chase is a smart guy. I really appreciated his commentary in this documentary because he was absolutely right on. He brought up the point that, why do people sell drugs in the first place? And why is it? And they even had some guy from the Wall Street Journal, of all places, talking about how actually these people, you know, the capitalists like to tell us that everybody has choices in life. You know, we're a product of choices. And, you know, if you're on unemployment or if you're, you know, in poverty, look to yourself. Don't look to the system. Always look to yourself. Well, these people are making rational choices. The drug economy is the only economy that is existing in inner cities, and people are going to have to do what they have to do to make money. And part of the reason why this is the only economy in the inner cities is a cycle of disinvestment that the wealthy have inflicted upon, you know, inner cities, where, you know, I don't want my tax dollars going to that city. I don't want my tax dollars to go to that school district. It's all, you know, part of the dog whistle politics. It's all, you know, the ruling class belief that my tax dollar is going to a minority. And that, you know, public housing and welfare and Medicaid, these are all symbols of government abuse. These are all highly visible in our society and must be destroyed. This is what's ailing us. This is the belief among the business community. This is what the business community believes, that we're a welfare nation, that, you know, immigrants, minorities, and others are mooching off of the system. And if only we can eliminate these programs, and if only we can, as David Chase says, get rid of the poor, kill the poor, then we can move forward. And that is why, you know, we have, to a good extent, drug use in America. It's because people are soothing the pain, because people, unfortunately, have very little choices when it comes to, you know, how to support themselves and whatnot. And a lot of the issues raised in this documentary are issues that all of us face. Okay, it's not, you know, just relegated to drug users. It's not. But, and then you can look at police work. You could look at law enforcement, how the financial incentives are built right into the system. I mean, this is a great, great documentary, and I really, really encourage you to check it out on Netflix. It's called The House We Live In. It's probably won a few awards, if it wouldn't surprise me. In any event, so, all right, I got to tell you, we got a big show, a big election night show coming up with Anti-Capitalist Radio, all right, David Arthur Smithers and Gabriel Perrier, and I want to encourage you to visit their website. They're going to put the show up on their website. It's called red-party.com. Or red-party.com. Okay, that's where they post their podcast. And they're going to be on this program as well with Christopher Allen Driscoll, Thomas Baldwin. Hopefully, Harry Kasian of the Zeitgeist Movement will be calling in. It's going to be a very special edition of Carson's Corner / Anti-Capitalist Radio. Make sure to support them. And make sure to tune in right here on Tuesday on Carson's Corner, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Also support the Facebook page. Make sure to support the website electionboycott.weebly.com. Also on Facebook, look us up, Election Boycott Advocates. Like the Facebook page. I'm actually running the Facebook page now. I'm posting stuff on it. Terry Lee withdrew herself from the group. And she was great in running the Facebook page. So now I'm doing that as well. So I'm not as good of a blogger as some of these guys. I'm a working class guy going to school full-time, working full-time. But I should be able to update the page regularly. It's very, very important stuff. So that's what we got going on. And, friend me on Facebook, too, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And lastly, on YouTube, youtube.com/BobCarsonMMA. Thanks for those that have listened, and until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.